scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilar. Aguilar left circle. Passing the yellow shot. Save made by Aguilar. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get things going on this Friday, September 20th. We are underway on Flames Talk, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for hanging out with us. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. This hour on Flames Talk, we've got a treat for you because we have got a lot to dive into through the first 2 days of training camp and really starting to set up the rest of camp as it starts to get into the nitty-gritty. We have Aaron Vickers with us from NHL.com. Vicks has been with us all week and is with us here in our Groundworks downtown studio. Hello, Vickers.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. And the special
I see we're
treat,
not going alphabetical order here.
We are not. I went
well,
with
by first name. You can't top AA.
Fair point. Also, I went with the guy who's been here all week, and then the surprise.
Yeah.
You Wes Gilbertson is with us as well from Post
this
Media.
This is special, guys. Like, I'm still not totally over not being invited to Penticton, but we're like 25 minutes from my house. This is a road trip for me.
This is a road trip.
I got to say, I'm a little disappointed. When you said we had a special guest, I thought you came through with that Avril Lavigne request from earlier in the week.
I don't think we ever actually put the the request out, but that would have been awesome if Avril Lavigne was just sitting here. Yeah, we would have.
Just a four-person round table.
Would have been a different show.
Still right here, guys. yeah, right here.
Wes Gilbertson, Post Media. Aaron Vickers, NHL.com. Steinberg along with you. 2 days into training camp. We got a Friday training camp round table to kick around here on Flames Talk. Thanks for hanging out with us. And, you know, it's been a really interesting first couple of days of training camp. And so I just wanted to kind of throw around some different topics and some different things that we can get into. I actually kind of want to try to see if we can do these roundtables. So rare that we get the entire Flames Talk family on the air at the same time. So wouldn't mind doing this on a more regular basis if we can make it work this season. So I thought it's a good time to kick it off here on a Friday. Let's just start it off with a nice broad topic. We're 2 days into camp. There's still weeks to go before the start of the regular season. Whether it's a story that we've been watching already or one that you've got an eye on, guys, what's the biggest story of training camp as we're 2 days in for the Calgary Flames?
Whoa, Wes, you're the guest here. You can field the first one.
Special guest.
I didn't say special.
I think you're both special.
I think the biggest storyline of camp is the most obvious one, and that's who's going to win the goalie job. And I know everyone wants to know the answer to that yesterday or the day before that, but I'm really curious what we see, knowing how limited opportunity is for goaltenders in the preseason. Like, you're making this decision on, you know, two and a half games apiece. You're probably making the decision even sooner so that you can get some run out of your starting guy as you get towards the end of the exhibition season. Mm-hmm. And so that, for me, guys, is the biggest storyline of camp. It is who wins that battle to be the number one netminder for the Flames, even if that sort of title, the opening night gig, doesn't turn out to be like a, I don't think anyone's expecting a 55 or 60 game starter, but I am really curious who gets the first crack at it.
Yeah, I agree. And it is the battle of camp, but at the same time, it's one that I don't think is necessarily resolved in camp, but it's the one that's going to get all the headlines. You have three goalies who are somewhat different, varying degrees of unknown at the NHL level or with question marks around them. You've got Cooley, lots of faith from the organization in giving him a 2-year deal with a one way in year two, but hasn't shown much at the NHL level. And 6-game sample size with San Jose Sharks last year. Goals against average near .580 save percentage. You've got Dan Vladar, who's a pending unrestricted free agent, coming off hip surgery, so you don't know how he's going to respond. He's had a pair of down years, an .882 save percentage in 20 games last year. And you've got Dustin Wolf, who I think secretly most of the Calgary Flames, maybe not so secretly, most of the Calgary Flames fan base is pulling for. And in 36 games last year, 3.16 goals against and an .893. So from a numbers perspective, the clubhouse leader, if you will. But they've got little runway to prove that they should be one of two guys, or maybe it's potentially all three start the season with the Flames. Who knows how this is going to shake down?
Don't go there.
No? You don't want to do the goalie carousel?
Oh, no.
The fact of the matter remains is, to me, this is the most interesting. To Wes, it's the most interesting. Pat?
I think it would be my number one story as well. I'll just throw in a, because I don't know how it plays itself out. I don't know if Devin Cooley is able to prove that he can be a full-time NHLer and if he can do that in training camp. I don't know if he's going to make it a difficult decision on this goaltending department as to who might get sent to the American League. But we also don't know if Dan Vladar's adjustment to a significant hip surgery is going to be really quick. We don't know if Dustin Wolf, we won't know until, you know, weeks, months into the season, how Dustin Wolf's able to handle being in the NHL all the time. The rigors, the actual physical side of it, the mental side of it, all of it. Facing NHL shooters each and every night. We don't know any of these things. There's plenty of unknowns. So that one, I think, is the number one story for me and the story that I think we're going to be watching as the year goes along, not just training camp. But the only other one that I'll throw out, and it's a story that I guess I should have seen coming, but has become pretty apparent to me so far the first 2 days of camp, and that is the whole idea. Like, there's very clearly, guys, I don't know, chip on the shoulder or prove you wrong, or like there's kind of that whole like, hey, we know that there's low expectations and we know that people are talking about trading veteran A and veteran B. Wes, it feels like there is a very large realization inside that room that they know they're being counted out before they even drop the puck on the regular season. And I think that they're using it for a little bit of motivation going into this season, which I'm all for.
Yeah, absolutely. You can tell pretty clearly that was the message, that there's sort of a, you know, this is a group that is collectively stewing about the fact that everyone wants to fast forward 2 or 3 years and see what it looks like then. And I don't think I don't think anyone's wrong on either side. I get why people want to fast forward to the future of this team. I think that's an indication that there's so much buy-in from the fan base, from the general public, to the direction that they are going, to the overhaul that they're going through. And yet, you know, you've got guys like Nazem Kadri and Blake Coleman who have won Stanley Cup rings. You know, you've got a guy in Ryan Lomberg who just finished partying with the Stanley Cup 15 yep. minutes ago. And that's why you pay those guys, is to make sure that this is a team that doesn't show up on day one of camp and think the season's a write-off already. And I do think that they have the right mix of veterans to make sure that message is clear. It's just, you know, you kind of wonder when the results go whatever direction they wind up going, like that's going to be the real litmus test. If you can get off to a great start, yeah, hey, we're going to be the underdogs. We're going to prove everybody wrong. If you stumble out of the gates and it starts looking like a long season from the early stages, I think that's a different challenge.
Well, and that's the message being relayed in the room, but it was also the message being relayed to the media, because you think of Nazem Kadri and him being asked about his future on day one, and he's like, whoa, can we pump the brakes and maybe play a game first? And yeah. You had Michael Backlund asked about the potential of an up-and-down season, and Backlund fires back, well, why does it have to be up and down? And even Coach Ryan Huska had mentioned, well, whoa, this perception is coming from you guys. It's not coming from us. So there's a
same
clear
with Rasmus Anderson.
Same with Rasmus Anderson.
I don't care what you guys write, except
for Wes.
Yeah.
Naturally.
So you've got the messaging internally, you've got the message coming externally through the media. And you're right, Pat. This is a very sort of interesting scenario. We'll see how it plays out through the course of the first 2 weeks of the first month of the season, where they can maintain this us against the world sort of mentality a little bit.
And I mean, it is a powerful motivator. Like, it can be something that brings a group together, but to what extent? Like, if you go back to 10 years ago, right, that season that Michael Backlund talked at length about on Thursday, yes, they absolutely proved the entire hockey world wrong. In fact, they did it by making the playoffs and did it again by winning a playoff round. But when you look back at 10 years ago, was it the fact that they were, you know, really angry at being counted out? Or was it a lot of luck and teams taking them lightly? Mm-hmm. And a
lot of stretch passes.
Lot of stretch passes.
Not a lot of structure in that one?
Like, was it more those things? Or was it the fact that they had something to prove? And so to what extent it can actually bring the best out of a team, I don't think that's as tangible or easy to ascertain.
Well, and every time you're considered or projected to be somewhere around a bottom five team, that doesn't automatically mean you're going to rally against the world and make the playoffs and beat the Vancouver Canucks in the first round and be able to give everybody the middle finger and say, hey, we did this and you said we couldn't do it. That is a long shot. You can run that season in a simulator 100 times. Mm-hmm. That scenario is
doesn't matter how angry
once.
They are.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how angry you are. You still have to go out and do it. And to just look back 10 years ago and say, well, they did it then, so they can do it now, I don't know if that's necessarily a realistic expectation.
You know what I'm sure, and we're never going to hear a player come out and comment on this publicly, but I'm sure what's tricky, guys, is, you know, this is a really knowledgeable fan base, as we know. And while people enjoyed the ride that 14-15 was, I think people also look back on that as a season that ultimately sort of derailed a rebuild.
Yep.
You know, that put
1,000%.
Right? That put the team on a different track all of a sudden. They made decisions after that they just weren't in a position to make or that they shouldn't have been making at that point. Suddenly they're trading draft picks away like crazy. And so I'm sure it's challenging for the current players, whether that's Rasmus Anderson or Michael Backlund or whoever. Like, there are fans who hope that they lose a whole lot of games because that's what's good for the future. And again, not criticizing anyone for feeling that way, but I think that's got to be weird as a player. Like, you show up and it not only are the expectations low, but there's sort of a hope in the city that this doesn't go that great, right?
I agree.
Some, for sure there are, no doubt. I mean, you saw it. We saw it last year.
Team Tank.
As they started to lose games, like, you saw some of the different fan accounts like posting different memes and videos about, hey, they lost, high five, like whatever. We saw that last year, and there's definitely a feel like that among some anyway in the city.
And this is a generation of players having kind of grown up in the social media generation that's aware of that. And so, again, I don't think this is a pointing fingers at anybody, but that chip on your shoulder is even different now because in some ways, some of your own fans are hoping that this becomes a little bit of a long winter.
And the other delicate balance to this is you want to see your young players perform well, but if Dustin Wolf comes out and somehow manages to blow the doors off this thing and hinders the Flames from finishing in the bottom five, how are you going to reconcile the, we're so happy that Dustin Wolf did this, versus now we're picking 13th in the draft, for example, and have to cough that up to the Montreal Canadiens? Like, that's a weird dynamic, weird balance where, to your point, Wes, yeah, you want the Calgary Flames to get as high a draft pick as possible, but at the same time, you need your young players to grow. And if they grow to a point that it helps push this to a more competitive team, from a fan base perspective, how are you going to feel about that?
And this is where you are trying to kind of have both. Like, this is exactly what management is referring to when they talk about building a culture. You want your veteran players, Nazem Kadri, Rasmus Anderson, Mackenzie Weegar, Blake Coleman, Michael Backlund. You want those guys to sizzle after losses. You want that to be a sour mood after losses, so all the young guys know, hey, we're not getting used to this. That's what they're talking about when they were, you know, when they say build a culture, that's exactly what they're referring to. Hey, maybe you do kind of want to try to accomplish both at the same time. It's not that easy to do, but their head's in the exact right place.
Well, you don't want it to evolve into a situation like in Moneyball where Brad Pitt goes in with a baseball bat and smashes the stereo because Jeremy Giambi's
Billy Bean.
Yeah.
That was a real life.
I understand it wasn't a, well, it was an.
No, that was real footage.
That was live. That was live from the clubhouse.
Yeah.
You can't have that set into your locker room.
That's what losing sounds like.
Whoa, we didn't get Avril Lavigne, but did we get Brad Pitt over here?
No, you got Billy Bean. That's who
I don't know if you're good enough with the numbers, bud.
No, definitely not. You know, it's funny because like you don't want to have players that are okay with losing. I'm putting myself in the shoes of a fan, right? And if I'm a fan of a team, I don't want my players ever to be okay with losing. And you want to make sure that they are putting and leaving everything on the ice every single night. But at the same time, yeah, I don't blame a fan for being like, oh, geez, if we could get a couple of top five or top 10 picks over the next 2 years, that could really set us up for the future. Plus the whole idea of this year's pick being top 10 protected when it comes to the pick that's going to transfer to Montreal in the Monahan trade. Like, there's a lot of things at play. It's not easy to do both things at the same time, but really all you can do is, as a general manager, make trades that don't impact right now and set your team up for not just right now. And I do think so far, guys, like, if you take a look at the roster construction, this may not be a team that is destined for 32nd overall, but they're also, Vic, they're not doing things just to impact right now and just to try to make a playoff spot. Like, if they don't make the playoffs this year, I don't think that Craig Conroy and that management group is going to look at this season as an abject failure the way perhaps we have the last 5 or 6 years.
No, this isn't a mushy middle type team where you're hoping to limp into the playoffs in a wild card spot. And then the old famous, we'll see what happens when we get there. And look 2 years ago what the Florida Panthers were able to do. And then the next season they follow it up with a Stanley Cup. I don't think it's a write-off of a season or a loss of a season if you don't make the playoffs. And as such, you're not going to see draft picks move for a 5 or 6 defenseman to try to help shore up the blue line, or you're not going to see a move done where, okay, hypothetically, say if none of these three goalies finds traction, that you're going to go to the market and bring in somebody that you can think can be a 1A or a 1B type goaltender to help shore up that position. The focus is very firmly on the future, but you're using your established players now to set that tone, to set that culture where losing isn't acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're sort of, you can't necessarily win with the public comments. And by that, I just mean, if they didn't stand in front of us yesterday and today and say, we want to make the playoffs, we believe we're better than you guys think we are, we'd be criticizing them on the 100%. Other side, right?
Yep.
Oh, geez, these guys have already given up.
Look at these complacent guys.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. Bad. And so, you know, you're kind of damned either way there. But I think Flames fans, regardless of what the results look like this season, I think you can be heartened by what you heard yesterday. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to need to see evidence of it throughout the year, and I do believe from the Colemans and Andersons and Uyghurs and Backlunds and on and on, you're gonna see that evidence that, hey, these guys don't like losing.
Yep.
But what are you gonna say on day one? Yeah, you know what, I saw we were picked to finish 25th, and that sounds about right.
I think we could actually do closer to 28th, if I'm being positive.
Yeah, like, you can't
with
come
you
out and say that either.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because on the text line on Thursday, because we were playing, we heard from Jonathan Huberdeau, who mentioned the P word, and Michael Backlund, who mentioned the P word, that being playoffs, and Nazem Kadri talked about surprising people, and immediately the text line was like, oh, these guys are delusional. What is wrong with these guys? And to which I respond, what do you, there's 31 other training camps. I don't care if you're in San Jose or Chicago or Buffalo or any other team that finished outside the playoffs last year or that is viewed to be a not great team. Not one of those places. I didn't hear Tyler Toffoli coming out and saying, yeah, you know what? I signed here just to hang out with Celebrini. Like, I don't really care how we do. we're probably not going to make the playoffs. I don't think we're going to make, like, nobody's saying these things. Yeah. Every team is talking about the playoffs being their goal, as they should be.
And can you imagine if a player did, how quickly would they be tossed on the waiver wire or tossed out on trade bait to just get them out of your organization? Yeah. Because in the situation where you're the Calgary Flames, you're the San Jose Sharks, Buffalo Sabres, so on and so forth, you can't have those thoughts creeping in. It's detrimental to everything you're trying to accomplish and build.
Yeah. Yeah. No one bases their season ticket campaign around maybe next year.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, one other question before we pause. What's been the most fascinating line that we've seen, forward line, through the first 2 days of training camp? You go first this time.
I'm going to go Sharon Govich, Kadri, Kuzmenko, because from March 1st onward, those three players were the top 3 point getters on the Calgary Flames, and it looks like it's going to be a bit of a stacked line. I think one of the biggest questions on the Flames this season is who's going to score, who's going to produce. And you had Kadri, who had 24 points in 23 games from March 1st onward. That was tied for 24th in the NHL. Kuzmenko had 21 in 21, and Sharon Govich had 20 in 23. And two of those three guys hit double digits in goals in that. So when you're looking for how are the Flames going to, A, keep it out of the net with your goaltending and your defense situation, but on the other side, who's going to score? Well, you had a de facto, you have built, if it stays this way in camp, and it could change as soon as Saturday, who knows? But you have built a de facto line, which I would definitely call Calgary's number one. And I know we've had debate in the past. Well, we don't name any of the top three lines because of how they're used and how they produce and so on and so forth.
Right.
For me, this could be a bona fide number one line for the Flames.
Well, you're wrong, because the most fascinating line is clearly...
How dare you, I say.
I got to tell you, ever since I heard the interview with Ryan Huska from Penticton, where he teased the Pospisil Huberto Mantha line.
See, and I didn't want to go there because then Paddle just referenced the fact I went to Worlds once.
You been to Worlds?
You know what? I actually just Photoshop all those pictures. So
that to me is the most fascinating. And it's really like I wrote today, and I'll just repeat here. Martin Pospisil is a guy, last year we weren't even talking about him. I'm not sure it was more than a footnote when he got cut from camp and put on waivers and sent to the Wranglers. And yet this year,
1,000%, by the way, it didn't even register.
Yeah. Didn't hit any radar.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Didn't even raise an eyebrow.
And I'll be honest, when Conroy made the decision to give him the recall, a day after they recalled Connor Zary or whatever it was, I was like, really?
Yeah.
And obviously now, proved a lot of people wrong.
You could make a case he might be their most important player going into this season, just looking at the opportunity they're going to get. And I know people roll their eyes when you hear about, could this kickstart Jonathan Huberto? Could this get him going? And I don't want to put all this on that topic, but I know the Calgary Flames went back and looked at Jonathan Huberto's sort of history in Florida and what they thought was successful. And one of the things that they had on the wish list was to find him a center with better speed. And I think Martin Pospisil is probably the Flames' fastest forward. If not, he's certainly their fastest option at center. And then you look on the other side, you've got Anthony Mantha, a guy who mentioned today that he wants to try and shoot 300 pucks this year, which is a totally far-fetched goal, I think, but tells you where they want his head at. When Jonathan Huberto passes it to you, don't pass it back thinking he's going to shoot. Rifle it on net. And listen, this experiment might not work at all, guys. I don't know. But to me, it's by far the most fascinating line because I'm just so curious to see what it looks like.
Mantha's career high is 198, just for the record.
Yep. I mean, the Flames haven't had someone shoot 300 pucks since Jerome McGinley. So this is not a number that you throw around.
I mean, I put that out there on Twitter, the 300 pucks and or the 300 shots, and people were like, holy, whoa. Let me go. This courtesy of Stephen Birch, who's really good on the math side and the analytics side of things. He says only 9 players in the league had 300 or more shots last season. Only 79 players had 200 plus shots. Now, Ryan Huska did clarify a little bit. He's like, I don't know if I said 300. I might have suggested 3 or more a game.
Right.
Is what they're looking. 3 a game would be, quick math, 246 over the course of I think I did that right. Three times.
Good enough that I'm not
fact
checking.
Three times 80 is 240, then yeah, 246.
Yeah.
So, which is still a lot of shots and still 50, almost 50 more than his career high in Detroit from 2018-19. And then I went back and listened to the Mantha quote, and he said almost 300. But still,
then he kind of settled into the 300 group.
He really did.
Yeah, he really did.
But I think, and he answered that, or he gave that response on a question about the opportunity. Like, he was asked, hey, you signed here because of opportunity. Now you're here. What is the opportunity to feel like now? He said, it feels present. And the conversations I've had, they want me to hit this target in shots, which Wes is just kind of an indication as to what they feel his role could be and how much they want to use him, power play, 5-on-5, so on and so forth. So to break the tie, Mantha, Huberdeau, and Pospisil is the most interesting line for me so far.
You always side with Wes.
Try not to.
I mean... I wouldn't call it siding with Wes.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't like where you're going here.
I would think of it as sort of siding with the correct answer.
Yeah, let's not let facts get in the way of a good story, pal.
Look, if you were present for the absolute teeth kicking I took for about 7 straight minutes at Winsport on Thursday, I feel like I have to side with Wes.
You scared of him? You're scared of him.
He's intimidated me into this.
How's it feel to be called intimidating for the first time in your life?
It's not bad, actually. I kind of like it.
we've got a little Friday roundtable for you here on Flames Talk. Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, Aaron Vickers, NHL.com. A few other topics to get into, a little more rapid fire as we continue along. We're coming at you, all three of us, in our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's a Friday roundtable with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, and my name is Pat Steinberg, going through some training camp stories. I'm going to try and do these every couple of weeks, little Friday roundtable, or I don't know if we'll be able to do it on Friday, but a roundtable of some sort on some day of the week. Just with the three of us, because... the Flames Talk fam all together in the same room. We'll take that every once in a while. Guys, we talked about the biggest story we'll be watching during camp. Talked about the most fascinating forward line so far. Wes, what's something we haven't seen yet that you're looking forward to seeing? Or something that, you know, you're pretty certain we are going to see at some point between now and the beginning of the regular season?
You know, I mulled over this question, and you can go a whole lot of different ways with it. And I'll tell you the one thing that I'm excited to see is Hunter Brustevich in preseason action against NHL caliber opponents. Yeah. Because I'm really intrigued, obviously, by the junior numbers. You know, Mackenzie Weegar even put it today, sort of said, like, yeah, I saw you had 90-some points in the OHL last year. That's nuts. That's crazy. So you've got the numbers. You've got what I think was an impressive performance at the Young Stars, and you guys saw more of it than I did. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought he acquitted himself quite well.
That's fair, yeah.
The prospect tournament. And I've been really impressed with him in practices. He has poked more pucks off the sticks of veteran guys than I was expecting. Like his... From my eye, the way he wants to try to defend, albeit understanding the sloppiness that comes with the first couple practices of the year, it might work. And I just want to see it against NHL competition in preseason games. That is when you've been doing it for a while, like the three of us have, you don't always get too jazzed up for exhibition games, but there's some guys you're excited to watch. And so that's one thing that I really can't wait to see is Brustevich against NHL competition. Yeah. And I'd anticipate that we'll probably see that as soon as
Sunday
in Seattle.
Yeah.
Certainly he'll be on one of those two rosters on Monday. But that's something that I'm excited to see for sure.
Yeah, for me, watching Brustevich at the Young Stars, he was their best two-way defenseman. I think I would put it that way. I don't know if you saw it the same way, Pat, but for me, he looked like the jump from junior to a Young Stars tournament when you're playing against 20 to 24 year old pros that have AHL experience, and a lot of the players that he went up against were regulars in the AHL last season. I thought he acquitted himself well. So to see Brustevich in a more elevated role, perhaps even with a more defensive-minded NHL partner,
yeah,
I'd be curious to see if that even frees him up a little bit more offensively as well.
He's been sort of mostly with Tenorti for the last couple of days. Yeah. We think that makes a ton of sense for a first preseason game, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I would think so.
What's your?
I want to say this just to rile you up, and I know you're going to roast me here, but I'd like to see William Stromgren in a preseason game with NHL winger and center, just to see how he works. And for me, just looking at Stromgren and the way he plays and the way he profiles, I wouldn't hate to see him on the left side of Backlund and Coleman, just as a sort of a teaser. And the reason I bring up Stromgren, one, year-over-year most improved prospect, Craig Conroy said that multiple times. But the other thing Craig Conroy said to me in Penticton was, he's a player that's going to be pushing this year right out of camp. And I'm curious to see what the opportunities for him look like if management is thinking that.
Yeah.
And again, he was one of the better players for Calgary at the Young Stars, in my opinion, as well.
For sure. I won't roast you. Although it is pretty funny. His answers.
I did have a backup just in case.
A lot of William Stromgren answers from Vicks over the last week, but
yeah.
Yeah.
The William Stromgren week?
Yeah, it really has been.
He's got Michael Backlund. Mm-hmm. I've got the other Swede.
Okay. Are we down to only two Swedes?
Well, no, Rasmus is around.
Rasmus is still there. That's a good point. I'm really just curious.
Put
to
me
see.
On Team Rasmus.
We know who Team Rasmus is.
Yeah. We know who the captain is of that team. I'm really interested to see how Zane Parekh kind of progresses through training camp. Because I thought I had a conversation with somebody yesterday at Winsport and just talking about, you know, how quickly he progressed on over the weekend and how he went from looking one way on Friday night and looking completely different on Monday night.
180.
Complete 180. And just kind of the what they're trying to drill into his head and how quickly he picks up things and how, you know, how eager he is and some of the things that, assuming that they'll return him to Saginaw in the Ontario League, some of the things that they'll take, that they'll need him to take with them. And, you know, just so I'm curious, because I bet you the first preseason game, there's going to be some fish out of water moments where it's like, holy. But I bet you the third or fourth preseason game, it looks a whole lot less like that because he's such a quick study and he's so sharp. So I'm just curious to see. I think Parekh plays two or three preseason games before he, I think, inevitably gets sent down. We'll see. But and maybe he ends up being a late guy at camp and they keep him for a little bit longer. But I'm just curious to see how he looks at the end of his preseason compared to his beginning, which, you know, could be, I bet you he's on the road Sunday in Seattle because he'd count as one of the vets.
Yeah, being a former first round pick. Yeah.
I'm going to throw a bit of a, not necessarily a curveball at you, but I want to hear your guys' reaction to this because starting with a conversation with Ray Edwards, obviously, you know, director of player development for the Flames, he was talking about the only downside of Parekh's summer is that he didn't get a lot of training.
Right.
He was
playing nonstop.
Yeah, Memorial Cup, obviously, from there to the combine, then development camp, then Canada's World Junior Camp or Showcase Camp. Like, it's just been hockey. And that got me wondering, guys, if we could see a little bit of an extended stay, even if it doesn't mean games. I wonder if they would even consider just a little bit of an extended off season. Get him in the weight room a little bit, I suppose, similar to the Leo Carlson plan, although not quite on the same path. But I wonder if you keep him around into October or early November before you send him back to World Juniors, just to make sure you have him training for what is going to be a really bright future in the NHL.
I could see that, because the second he goes back to Saginaw, he's playing 35 to 40 minutes a night.
Yep.
On a very good team. He's going to log that much ice time. So you're basically just keeping that cycle going. if you don't give him a little bit of a break or a little bit of a hiatus. And then from Saginaw, he's going to go to Canada's camp. He's very likely going to make that team, World Junior, so on and so forth. So, yeah, I don't actually mind that sort of break, whether it's mental, whether it's somewhat physical where, yeah, you're getting him in the gym, but you're also trying to manage sort of the workload there. He did tell me in Penticton that he managed to put on 10 pounds somehow, and I'm not sure necessarily when he would have had the time to do that. But I don't mind your scenario there, Wes, where you get him around the NHL team, you keep him around the NHL team. He's going to absorb a lot. We all know he's a student of the game. We all know how smart he is graduating high school at 16. I wonder if that's not a sneaky, clever way to show him what he needs to do day in, day out at the NHL level without actually taxing him somewhat.
Yeah, I just think it's a possibility knowing how much hockey he's going to wind up playing anyways, right? Like, you're not keeping him through the season and having him only...
So do you play him in 9 games?
You don't even need to necessarily do that, no.
I don't think so. Now see how he's progressing. I'll be honest, I don't know. I don't know how all the sort of involved parties would react to it. Yeah. I just, you know, knowing the importance of getting some training time and understanding that because of how much hockey he's played, he's missed some of that. And I think it's a decision that could be based on what you see in the next few weeks. Yeah. You know, does he just need to get back and jump back in with Saginaw and, you know, take it from there? Have you had him around the NHL guys enough to know what he's working on? What did it look like in preseason? Did he get the sort of eye-opener that you need every 18-year-old to get about just how hard it is to go into a corner against an NHL third liner and come out with the puck? Like, yep. I just, again, a little bit of a curveball, but I wonder if it would be on their radar.
Interesting. Okay, couple rapid fires for you. First, who's the guy with the most to prove in camp right now?
Matt Coronato. And I say that for two reasons. One, he's not working on an NHL line right now. He's certainly not working in a top nine role. I understand we're 2 days into camp. He's going to get lots of runway. Things can change, but...
Who is he with today? Schwint and Hunt, I believe?
I believe so. Yeah. You know, those are guys who've played in the NHL, but you're not looking at that as a potential fourth line to open the season. And so I would say Jacob Pelche, except that his waiver status, I think, buys him some leeway when it comes to making the Flames roster. Like, I think Jacob Pelche would have to have a rotten camp to not start with the Flames, because you don't want to lose a previous first round pick on waivers. Where I see more pressure for Matt Coronato is he's essentially getting the message now, and we've seen this with plenty of youngsters throughout the years, so don't freak out about it. But the message is, you're not on the team right now, play your way on. And to me, that's why he is under the most pressure.
Pat, I got to go William Strömgren on this one.
I don't think that you're being serious.
No, I'm not being serious.
You've really nailed the pronunciation, though.
Well, you say it as many times as I do.
Very good point.
I feel like Jonathan Huberdeau is too much of a layup for this, so I always kind of go back to Dustin Wolf on this topic, and that's not to say that if he doesn't prove it this year, you wash your hands of him, it's done, there's no more runway to be had for a 23-year-old goalie who's maybe potentially looking at his first full-time stint in the NHL. But you've got the WHL, CHL Goal of the Year, two-time AHL Goal of the Year, AHL MVP. The expectation isn't that he's going to come in, win the number one job, play 65 games, and be a finalist for the Vezina. But I am intrigued to see whether or not he can prove that he's a full-time NHLer, and maybe potentially down the road that he's an option to be a number one.
I go to Zeri and Pospisil on this one.
Yeah.
And not because I think that last year was a fluke, but more just, okay, can you do it again? And can you be effective NHLers, impact NHLers, and maybe even improve upon what you did last year in year number two in the NHL? And I'm pretty confident that they've got the ability to do it, but that they would be the ones for me. Like, okay, prove that now you can do this in year two, in year three. As Brad Treliving always said, it's an everyday league. Well, for the most part, they were everyday league guys last year. So now what can you do in year two of being in the league if you're Pospisil or Lazeri? Because they were huge revelations for the team last year.
The reason that I just finished talking about Coronado and Pelche as guys who find themselves sort of on the outside looking in is because
those two.
Because the two guys you just mentioned, Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil, jumped the queue on them.
Yep.
Right? Everyone wants to know, well, why isn't there a spot for Matt Coronado? Why is Jacob Pelche potentially on the fourth line or maybe not even in the lineup? The answer is Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil and to a lesser extent, Vancouver's insistence that you take Andre Kuzmenko back in the Lindholm deal.
Yep. Okay, last one. Who's someone flying under the radar that maybe shouldn't be? Who's not getting talked about enough?
Would he dare go Stromgren again here?
No, because he's been talked enough plenty. fun fact, I get a dollar every time I say his name. So that's really what the root of this is. He is certainly on the radar. I'm going to go Miramanov. Came in from the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yep.
7 points in 20 games. All the metrics between he and Uyghur were very positive, very strong.
Yep. But I think they've been together for the first 2 days of camp as well.
But I think this is the first time I've mentioned his name, heard his name mentioned. And I think there's a lot on the line for him, too, to prove that he's actually a full-time NHL. He had a real good run of 20 games at the end of last season. But I still don't know what he is. And a healthy Miramanov, I don't think we necessarily know what it is. Because the knee surgery that he had last offseason, all the reports that I've heard, it takes about a full calendar year to get back to 100%. So in theory, we're going to see Miramanov at 100%. I'm curious to see what he can do with it.
You know, one of the great things about Flames talk is I don't think we let anyone fly under the radar.
Fair point.
I think we...
Tough to fly under the radar if you're a Flames player on Flames talk.
Yeah, it feels like we've talked at length about everybody. The guy that I'm growing more and more convinced is going to be a factor sooner than later is Sam Morton. And I don't think he's an under the radar option to make the opening night roster, but I do think that he can really make a statement in the preseason that he's ready to play NHL games sooner than later. They obviously just signed him out of the college ranks at the end of last season, but he's 25 years old. Like, this isn't your prototypical prospect. Had a great chat with him at the start of camp about the fact that last season he didn't even have a summer because he torn up his knee. And so he's the guy that I think is maybe, if it's not under the radar, he's just starting to put himself on the radar. If I'm Cole Schwint, I'm looking in my rearview mirror thinking that suddenly that guy might be the top call-up candidate at center if I'm not careful. And so, you know, do I think we're talking about him making the team? No, I don't think so. But do I think we're talking about a solo lap for Sam Morton by December or January or February? I absolutely think it's a possibility. And I know there's some in the organization that feel the same way.
I like both those. I only think it's happening right now. I think very, very shortly, even into the preseason, definitely into the regular season, I think this guy is going to become a fan favorite. But I don't know, we've barely mentioned Ryan Lomberg, and I think this guy is going to very quickly become one of the faces of the team, one of the guys that people are always, I think he's going to become a Flames social media darling very, very quickly. And it's not like he's an unknown quantity anymore. I mean, he's been a regular NHLer the last 3 years. He just won a Stanley Cup. We're talking about a guy who's turned himself into a full-time NHLer, but you know, if you weren't a hardcore Flames fan 6 or 7 years ago, if you are just becoming more of a hardcore Flames fan now, or you weren't paying as much attention then, or if maybe you just don't remember. I mean, he only played 11 games as a member of the Flames, but like, even in those 11 games, he fought Ross Johnston in a game against the New York Islanders. Ryan Lomberg is listed at 5'9", and just quickly gonna go do the quick Google.
While you look this up, one of Ryan Lomberg's teammates told me yesterday that I actually think he believes he's 8 feet tall.
So Ross Johnston, 6'5", 234, and Ryan Lomberg, 5'9", 184. So he's given up 40, 50 pounds and 6 inches, and he got absolutely ragdolled
but
by
he
him.
Still went.
But he stepped up and went. Like, and so things like that, I think very, very soon he will be a guy that people are talking about all the time, and I don't think we're talking enough about Lomberg, and I think it's an awesome signing. I really do.
I almost got offended on Lomberg's behalf when he said will become a fan favorite, but yeah, he only played 7 games in 17-18 and followed it up with 4 games in 18-19. But the lore of Ryan Lomberg as a member of the Calgary, maybe it goes even back to when he played in Penticton. I remember he was mic'd up for 1 game and got into a fight there. On the way to the bench, he pulls the mic up to his mouth and goes, "You guys get all that? Like, just this guy's a rock star."
Yep.
It's something I mentioned to him at the golf tournament, actually. Like, people are so excited you're back in this city, and yet you had 2 cups of coffee here. And he said it's one of the great things about Flames fans is, yeah, they are welcoming me back like I was a fixture for this organization for years. I'll just add, I know we started this roundtable talking about, like, we want to shock people, we want to make the playoffs. The second part of all those statements was about being hard to play against. And Ryan Lomberg's a big part of that.
Yep. Agreed. That was fun, boys. Thanks for hanging out. Little Friday roundtable. We'll do that again before the start of the season for sure. That was good.
That was awesome.
You can get Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. You can get Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Cam and Shan, our producers this hour, starting to wrap things up. This hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.